Hey everyone, Rob B here with Rob D, and this week we've got a special podcast for you. It's great getting all the lessons, but we talk about action. So this week we're going to make it real for you. Someone who's taken those lessons and built a double-digit portfolio in only 5 years. It's an incredible story that will inspire you to do more.
Welcome to the Property Podcast, where every Thursday morning, property investors come together to be informed and inspired. I'm Rob D with Rob B, and today we're joined by Mark Ward. He's listened to the podcast since the very beginning. He somehow stuck with us through all these years, and over that time, he's been achieving unbelievable things. So stick around. You won't want to miss hearing exactly what he's done, and more importantly, how he's done it.
So, Rob, as these things seem to happen, another month has passed. But great news, because another month means another house price index. And our favourite, the one that we report on the most, probably because they get the data out pretty quickly, is from HomeTrack. And we like HomeTrack as well because it breaks it down city by city. Now, there's no surprises, at least for us, of where everyone's ranked. In England, Liverpool, number one, followed by Nottingham, Leicester, Manchester and Birmingham. Really interesting, though, following up just behind them are Sheffield and Leeds in places 6 and 7. So areas we tipped at the beginning of the year doing very, very well. Edinburgh is leading the way for Scotland and in fact leads the charts overall. So people in Edinburgh are feeling very smug right now. And Cardiff in Wales doing very well too. So Rob, while it's good to keep everyone up to date of which cities are doing what, and it's not all doom and gloom out there, and there is positive growth because Liverpool's up by pretty much 5%, which is remarkable in this market when you think about it. But there's more to it than just the rankings this month.
Yeah, they always have a little bit of extra commentary on something that they've spotted in the data, which is quite interesting. And this month, they're analysing the amount of supply coming onto the market against the number of new sales that have been agreed. So in other words, what's the supply-demand balance? And one thing that they've pulled out is that in Manchester, the ratio of sales to new supply has increased, which is a signal that Manchester is likely to continue to grow in prices. And that's really interesting because Manchester has grown so quickly over the last couple of years. And when you go there and look up, there are so many cranes, there is so much new construction underway. People have started asking, does that mean that there's oversupply now? Is this an unsustainable boom in Manchester? And we've been saying for a while, no, if you look at what's going on, actually this is needed. All the supply is needed to soak up all the demand from new employment and so on. And this data really bears that out. So it's quite a useful forward-looking indicator that Manchester might not continue to grow at the absolute fastest in the whole country. It's at number 4 at the moment, but that growth is likely to continue when you look at that indicator.
Every week on the show, we ask you to send in your success stories. You can do this via all our social channels at Property Hub UK or via the forum, or even send us an email. We love hearing them. And that's why we do the podcast, the magazine, and the YouTube channel. We want to give you the knowledge and the tools, but we love hearing about your action.
Yeah, every time we get a success story sent in, we absolutely love it. But we particularly loved it when this popped up in our Instagram feed from Mark. He said, I've gone from telling you about my first buy-to-let 5 years ago to now just getting my 10th that should complete in the next 2 weeks. I'm planning for hopefully another 3 to 4 this year. This podcast was what gave me the confidence to start, so a massive thanks from me. What a message to receive.
Absolutely. Mark's got a great story about how he started as an accidental landlord, which so many of you have, that being just 5 years ago. And then from there, he's gone on buying 2 a year by buying below market value, refurbing and refinancing as a way to reach his goals. So of course, after receiving that message, we had to get in touch. So Rob D caught up with Mark for a little chat about his journey so far.
Hi, I'm Mark Ward and I live and invest in Carlisle, Cumbria.
This came about because you sent us a message on Instagram. You said telling us about your first buy-to-let 5 years ago and now just getting your 10th, which is amazing, obviously. Take us back to that first buy-to-let and how it came about, because I believe it was actually an accident.
Yeah, the first one, we were actually trying to sell our original house so we could get moved. The person that wanted to actually buy our house couldn't sell there. They had a 2-bed terrace, which was quite close to us. So we agreed basically that we would buy their terrace, that I'd put us about my first buy to let, so that they could buy our house and then we could get moved and buy our new house.
At that point, when you bought that first one, did you know that you wanted to be in property, or was that what kickstarted the whole thing?
I've wanted to be in property for quite a long time. I don't really know when it started, but it was been listening to you a lot from the start. And kind of that gave me the idea that it can be done. You've just got to make the figures work right, really.
How long was it after that first almost accidental purchase before you moved on to number two?
There was a bit more of a gap as I was building funds again. So we then bought the next one in August 15, and then it moved to January 16, and one in May 16, one in December 16. So and they just carried on every few months after that, basically.
Oh no, your thinking, I'm sure, has evolved over time. But what did you have in your mind regarding strategy, and what were your goals when you started out?
I'm trying to replace an income, basically, from my main company, so that if anything ever went wrong with that company, then I've got the income in the background.
On that second purchase, were you buying that with a view to being able to pull money back out of it?
Yeah, I've always tried to buy below market value. I use one single estate agent that brings me quite good deals. It's only this latest house that just completed that I bought from an auction. Everything else has all been through this one estate agent.
I can see how that gets easier over time, but how did you achieve that with the what was effectively the first property you ever bought off them?
I'd been looking for about a month or so before I actually bought it, so he did know that I was looking for something. We just got on quite well. We have done ever since.
So that, how much did you end up buying below market value on that second one?
Well, I paid $62,000 for it. Well, it's worth $75,000 at the moment. Maybe a little bit more because we've just put a new kitchen in recently into that house.
So it was a few months after that you bought the third property. That was obviously too early for you to refinance. So were you using funds from your business to finance that one?
Yeah, funds from business, basically, yes. But it did want complete overhaul, basically. We pulled a wall down between the kitchen and the lounge. So we extended that. There was already a conservatory on it. It was quite a nice house. We basically just done electrics, bathroom, decorating.
That's quite a major project to be doing fairly early in your investing career. Did you have any experience at that kind of thing?
I've been through a couple of floods on my own personal properties, so I have seen how the process all works. It's just a problem to solve, isn't it? It's just something I like. I enjoy the property side of it. I enjoy the negotiation and then obviously organising the doing them up.
And were you doing any of the work yourself or getting it all contracted out?
I don't mind stripping back everything. Quite like doing that side of things, but I don't have the skills for actually putting it back into place. So we are building, I'm trying different trades with different houses, basically. But we now have a project manager on this latest house that actually done my current home when it flooded. And he's very, very good. So we'll be probably sticking with him for a long time.
How far in did you get just using your own cash before the refinances and pulling money back out kicked in again?
It was approximately about 2 years, as soon as the first mortgage was ready to do. And now I have a mortgage broker that she knows when all of the mortgages are all ready. And basically, she just has a list of everything. She'll obviously look for what deals are around as each house needs it, basically. I've also been using Bridge and Finance on the last three. So we'll obviously bridge them, do the work on them, and then get them refinanced and go on to a buy-to-let.
How was your first experience with bridging? Because I think a lot of people find that quite scary.
Yes, it is, I suppose. But I don't really think of it as money as such, more as figures. I try not to attach the value to it as such. If you put an amount in as a cost for bridging and go from there, basically.
Would you have been able to build the portfolio as quickly as you have done without using bridging?
No, I don't think so, because lots of people have advised me basically that to just put it onto a standard mortgage with no redemption penalties. But I'd rather use the correct product for what it's needed for. So I find that if we do bridging and then after 6 months, once the work's all done, then we can put it onto the buy-to-let, pull the money back out. And that then obviously goes forward onto the next project or whatever we're working on at the moment at that time.
The ones that you bought with bridging, how much money do you think you've ended up leaving in compared to ones where you haven't used bridging? Because on those, I guess you're managing to get the uplift straight away rather than having to wait for the 2 years and then take your money out that way.
A very good example, Carlisle and York obviously both suffer quite badly from flooding. There's been an article on news recently to say that the flood defence plans are now all in place. Carlisle and York are going to have, basically, they're going to be the most protected cities other than London. So at the moment, I am actively looking at buying in the flood zone because the prices are still lower than they should be. For example, a good deal that we've done recently, we bought a house, a three-bedroom Victorian terrace, an ex-flooded property. It had been refurbished downstairs. We got that house for $80,000. We used bridging for that. I probably spent between $18,000 and $20,000 on it. The remortgage has just gone through on it recently, and we put the value at $135,000. So that seems to have pulled, obviously, pulled quite a lot of money back out for then moving on to the next. And I'm now currently buying another one just further down the same road.
Yeah, if you've got 75% on a value of $135,000, then it sounds like you've taken pretty much all your cash back out again.
Yeah, I've got just under $40,000 back out.
Amazing.
And I put, say, $20,000 in, just up $20,000 with fees. Mm-hmm. And then even $20,000 with the refurb. And yeah, it's near enough exactly where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And then hopefully, once the flood defences and everything are all back into place, then the value of that house should rise again. So I should be able to pull more out again next time it's remortgaged.
So this is really interesting. It sounds like you might be one of the only people who are actually buying in this area and everyone else is scared off by the flood risk.
We've had two major floods in Carlisle over the last 15 years. One was in the end of 2004, and the other one was 2015, basically. So, yeah, there's some good deals to be had at the moment.
Mm.
But I think, as I say, once the defences are done, over time, the prices will pull back again.
Clearly, you're not the only one who knows that these flood defences are coming, but do you think everyone else is too scared to take the risk in the meantime?
It seems to be that public knowledge seems to think that nobody can get insured for buy-to-lets because obviously it's not part of the flood re-scheme, but it is for my personal home. Mm. The family house is obviously insured with flood re on it, but the buy-to-lets are a commercial enterprise, so we are looking at the moment still being able to get insurance for them.
And other people believe that you can't?
I think so, yes. Mm. Everybody questions me, can I get it insured?
Mm. What about mortgages? Because I would have thought that lenders might have an issue with it as well.
Yeah, well, obviously that first one was bridged. And at the time, I took a chance basically with not having the flood insurance. We had buildings insurance on it, obviously, and they knew it was getting, the house was getting a refurb. And then obviously when we went to put the buy-to-let mortgage on it, yes, they wanted flood insurance. So that was a bit of a moment, but my insurance broker managed to sort it, no problem.
Mm.
Well, no problems that I knew about anyways.
You've done some things that I think a lot of people would consider a bit risky, or at least brave, let's say, in that you've made acquisitions quite quickly, you've done fairly heavy refurbs quite early, you've bought in areas that maybe other people wouldn't have bought. As you've gone along, have you been worried about not knowing everything? Have you been worried that you might be making mistakes that you don't know you're making?
No, I think that could be one of my main problems. I probably am overconfident. What I do, but because it's not an income stream for me at the moment, this is more for when I retire. My main business is what provides my personal finances, basically, and keeps everything settled. So I don't see the pressure that's on it. Housing is quite forgiving, isn't it, over time, I think.
Talk me through how you go about researching the deals that you buy and what the whole process is like, because it sounds like you have properties being brought to you, which
yes.
is unusual, I think. So when that happens, what process do you go through to decide whether it's one for you or not?
Obviously, after a conversation with the estate agent that I use, he can obviously give me what the values are. And I mean, Carlisle's not a big area, so I know quite a lot of what the value will be once the houses are done up. So it's just a case of obviously between us, we'll negotiate what prices to put in, and I go from there, basically. You'll put offers on a lot of houses that don't go through, but that's just part of the process.
How many do you say you offer on compared to how many you get shown?
I will offer on 10, maybe. The estate agent that I use in the background, he brings deals to me that he knows that I like.
Mm-hmm.
I go in there once a week or every other week, just have a bit of a look around, show face, keep in mind basically, and then when things come on, he knows what I'm looking for. So most of the times, if he brings a deal to me and we've got funds available, then we'll put an offer in. If the offer's accepted, then we'll basically go and have a look, make sure it is as we expect it to be. But I rely on the estate agent because I have bought so much stuff off him now that he is going to look after things for me. He's not going to recommend me onto a duff deal, if that makes sense.
So do you offer before viewing?
Yeah. But Steve, obviously, the estate agent, I feel quite close to him. We work quite well together. So he's never steered me wrong yet. Generally, whenever I put an offer in, it is always on the condition of that it will be as advertised, as we've been told.
And how low do you go with your offer?
That's the question, isn't it? The deals that are brought to me, there's normally a reason why they need to sell. So that's what I try and find out. What is the reason for sale? One house was the owner was going into residential care. Another house that just needed to move out of areas. That one went from 140 asking price to 105.
So the estate agent, I understand that you've built a really great relationship with him. But his duty, of course, is to get the maximum that he can for his client. You're presumably only seeing properties where there's some kind of problem.
Yeah, well, I am the right buyer. I'm kind of the right buyer for the situation because I'm not really worried about things as such.
Exactly.
I've got a very good team of people that can fix most problems. So, yes, I get told about the things that are a little bit different or why other people are worried about, like the flood area, for example. There's not many investors buying in the flood area.
What a great story so far. The great thing about Mark is he's done what we talk about so often, which is taken action. He did that. He's not just read the book and gone, that sounds an interesting concept. He's gone out and he's done it. And he knows now what he's looking for. He did go straight into the deep end with refurbs, and he's done some interesting things like buying on floodplains. But he's worked out issues. He's assessed his risks. He has taken on some risks that will make people feel uncomfortable around mortgages and those floodplains. But by building great relationships with his estate agent and broker, he's made some incredible progress.
Yeah, it really is phenomenal. If you said to most people, right, your strategy is you're going to buy a load of properties really quickly. You're not going to see them first. You're just going to make offers. You have to do a load of work to them that you've never done before. And by the way, they're all in flood risk areas. Most people would get a little bit nervous. And to be honest, if someone said to me that's what they're going to do, I'd say, oh, are you sure that's what you want to be doing? Maybe start off a little bit easier and build up from there. But Mark's done it, and the progress he's made is absolutely incredible. As you'll have got a sense from, I'm sure, from the conversation we had, Mark's not a flappable kind of guy. There's not a lot that phases him, and far more than action or strategy or anything else, it's that mindset that's allowed him to accomplish what he's done. So in next week's episode, we're going to hear more from this conversation that I had with Mark, where we're really going to dig into his mindset, find out how he's cultivated it, find out what's helpful for him, and find out how he's ultimately harnessed it to do these unbelievable things that we've heard about today. So of course, you should be listening every Thursday, but make extra sure you don't miss that one next week.
So it's time for Hub Extra now, where we look to give you that bit more, that bit extra. And make sure you are signed up on the Property Hub website because you will get the Hub Extra email that goes out every Friday. And we aim to make it the most valuable email in your inbox each week. But we also do a podcast version of it, and we give you something new or interesting every week. And this week, I'm looking forward to, because this is a new one for me. Rob, you've got a podcast recommendation.
Yeah, I have, and I've got my wife to thank for this one because she put me onto it. It's called A Heavyweight, and it's from Gimlet, who put out some great podcasts, including the startup podcast that tells a story about how they started their company. Lots of their shows are well worth checking out, but this one is called Heavyweight. And the concept is the host takes someone back to a moment in their life that they regret or that they keep thinking back to for some kind of reason. And he helps them resolve that situation and their feelings about it and move on. If that sounds heavy, it's really not. The host, Jonathan Goldstein, is so funny. The whole thing is just a really entertaining, enjoyable listen. So if you've got lots of podcasts about property and business and personal development, that's great because you're learning lots. But sometimes you just want to relax and have a really fun listen, and Heavyweight is perfect for that. So do check it out.
So as Rob's already said, we're going to be back next week and following up on Mark's story. And remember, Mark shared his story originally with us via the social channels. So get in touch. You don't all have to have a story like Mark's, but it's a great way to connect with us. You can find us at Property Hub UK on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and check us out on our YouTube channel as well, where if you're kind of now thinking, oh no, I need more content, head over there. We've got you covered. We'll, of course, be back on Tuesday with Ask Rob and Rob. So until all these wonderful events occur, take care, have fun. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.